Does it feel like summer?
Oh, the sun's out.
Do you?
I was driving this morning. I got up early today and I went and did some errands before we got started. And while I was driving, I drove past a car that was covered in snow. Now, I live near the mountains, and somebody came down from the mountains, and their car was covered in snow. What is it? April 32nd? What is the date?
I have no idea.
It is the 32nd.
It's sometime between February and July. That's all I know.
It's unbelievable. Like, the weather here is just crazy. The Northeast, it's been super cold, windy, rainy, snowy. And we have some, we're going to talk about summer projects today. And one of the things we want to do is we want to make a big garden bed so we could grow a bunch of vegetables and stuff. Taylor's been wanting to do this. And the guys who run the land excavating equipment won't drive on our property until we have 5 days of no rain. They said otherwise we'll destroy the topsoil going back. Because I have like a big, I have about 4 acres of grass. And then past the grass is the field we want to work. He's like, we will destroy your lawn until we know that it's hard. And like, it's like 2 days and then it pours rain. And then we get like 1 day and then it pours rain. And then we get 3 days and then it pours rain. It's just crazy. But
we had a whole bunch of rain this past weekend, and it's been kind of like that, but our temperature swings are probably not quite as extreme as yours. But, you know, so we planted a garden a couple weeks ago, and we'll have a video coming out about that soon as one of our summer projects. But it was like we planted it on a super sunny day, and then I looked at the forecast, and there was a bunch of rain coming, so we didn't water anything. Next day, it just about overflowed the beds that we had made. There was so much rain. And then since then, it's been the same thing. It's been on and off every day, every couple of days. So we haven't had to water them yet, which is awesome. And they're doing great and see growth. So, you know, I guess that's part of the seasonality of like why people plant things right now. But
yeah.
Yeah. So what's been going on? You guys been up?
What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Oh, you're asking me? I made my big mallet. Did you guys watch that video? Did you see that yet?
I haven't seen the video yet, but I saw the video of you smashing fruit with it.
Yeah, that was funny. I was going to do some sort of like mechanical thing with it, or like pound the post and do a bunch of little mechanical things. And everybody's like, oh my God, gal, look at this, gal, look at that, gal, look at this. So I was like, let me just smash fruit. Feed the chickens some vegetables for a couple of hours. And it was fun. I learned a lot on that video. And lathing is a lot harder. There's so many like nuances to lathing that I'm not good at. Like when you lathe something really long, the middle vibrates a lot. So if anybody has any clues how to keep the middle of something that you're lathing from vibrating. And then right away, some people are like, oh, put a steady rest on it. How are you going to put a steady rest on a bent branch or a piece of square material?
I just want to point out that you naturally used the word lathe as a verb, lathing.
I've been doing it on purpose. I've been doing it purposely for the last, everybody's been noticing it. So that shout out to all the fans that cross all the platforms, that everyone's been laughing, saying, I love how you keep using the word lathing. It's just the thing. We're going to make this word stick. I don't care what that guy says.
Did you see the post from Adam Savage a couple days ago where he put up a sketch of something he was working on, and there was a line going to a little piece that said lathe this down to a certain size.
Yeah, somebody, I think it was the grain doctor,
tagged all of us in it. Like,
somebody did. Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah, so that was fun. It was a great experience, and there was one moment where I purposefully broke a lathe tool, but. And it's, everybody's confused about that because people get mad at me that I mistreat tools, but I have a lot of old lathe tools that I have around, just that I've collected over the years. Like, they're kind of like high school lathing tools, you know, high school turning tools. So they're not high quality. And I put the chisel up to the spinning crazy shaped branch. And the second it hit like a knot, it broke the handle of the chisel. So I knew that it broke. I felt it in my hand. So I just kind of lazily stuck the chisel into the piece of wood, and the piece of wood, bang, 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 and then the chisel broke in two. I just took an opportunity to be silly. So people think I'm being serious. Like, what was that all about?
I mean,
it was a blooper, and I just left it right in the middle.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's danger everywhere.
Well, but I
just got to watch your eyes.
If you have a tool in your hand that's breaking, jamming it further into the wood.
Yeah.
It's kind of asking for trouble.
Oh,
right?
yeah. That's troll bait. Okay. Just some fun. But that was fun. And I had to make this tool to ream out the hole because I made the mallet head one of the heads where it gets tighter as it goes off of the handle as opposed to back onto the handle. Like all the American style hammers get tighter when they go on. I think most European style have the handle come through the eye hole and then lock at the end. And so I did that style and that was fun. It was fun figuring out and doing all that stuff. And now we're talking about summer projects today. Today I have to begin making this convertible bench. So I'm excited about that. It's going to be a fun project that I'm going to jump into. I got a deadline because it's going to be for Lincoln and they're going to put it in their magazine. So that's going to be a real fast turnaround. I'm hoping to be done by the end of this week. Today. Today's Friday, right? Today it should be.
Yeah. I don't know. No idea.
That's what I'm up to.
Cool. David, what about you?
I made an insane fancy birdhouse. It just kept adding to. It was supposed to be a really simple project, and I thought, hey, I'll just add some roof shingles on here. Oh, I should cut some acrylic and add some decorative brick here, and I kept doing it. And it was one of those things. It was really super fun, and it felt like I could just go on and on and on about details. And
it's really cute.
Thank you. A lot of times the details can be overwhelming and just tiring, but it didn't get that way. I just felt like I could keep going, but I really want to end this video.
Are those real succulents?
Yeah, those are real succulents. So cool. Whoever moves in will have to water them and take care of the landscaping. I haven't seen it in a couple of days, but I don't think anybody's moved in yet. And I'm not sure if anybody will. It's more about for me to look at as I look out the bedroom window. If somebody wants to move in, go ahead. But
yeah, so I did the little simple birdhouse with my kids for the shop class videos a few weeks back now. And as I did that, I got an email from Derek from Malden. And he's had a birdhouse video that's done really well for him. And so he immediately wrote and said, you're going to get feedback from people about this and about this. And people are going to yell at you for this. And, you know, it was like this, here's my experience, right? And I got a little bit of that, not a whole lot. But I would be prepared if I were you, if you haven't gotten it already, for a lot of, you know, like, so-and-so bird can't fit through that hole. Don't put a thing for the other animals to land on or they're going to, you know, eat the eggs.
I haven't gotten,
you know, like good feedback from people, right. But there's going to be a lot of it because everybody has experience with birdhouses.
The only, I cover it in the video. I'm like, we're just winging it. We're not doing any research. You know, I'm using plywood. The plies are going to come apart in the future and stuff like that. And I really did not do much research except for just a quick phone call with my grandfather. And so I put a perch on there and a couple of people are like, you can't put a perch on there. So I don't,
you can,
you, well, I did
you can.
I don't know what. Wait, that means, does that you? Mean I'm assuming from what Bob just said that other animals could land on there and like a snake could land on there and get in the hole or something.
Land, they fly down. Snakes fly down and land on the perch.
It's Northern Ohio. Yeah.
And then oh, speaking of Northern Ohio, I heard the Insane Clown Posse canceled their.
I know. Their big, I had to return my makeup. It's hard. You know how hard it is to return makeup.
I'll get back to the birdhouse in a second, but we are 50 miles south of Detroit, and that's where the Insane Clown Posse is. And like back in like the, I don't know, the late 90s, early 2000s, they used to have their whatever yearly rally in Toledo, and apparently there was like crazy like riot in downtown Toledo or so. I don't know the details, but they were banned from having their silly little whatever their rally is called. And there are a lot of Insane Clown posse people here. I don't get it.
Juggalos are people too.
Juggalos, that's what they're called. Yeah, I actually did see them probably in like 94-ish at a little club here in Toledo. And there was just, I went home sticky, covered in Faygo soda because it was just insane.
Do you have your Juggalo tattoo? Do you want to show it to us now?
Wow, that's a lot bigger than I expected.
Some
it
secrets
to be.
Need to be kept as secrets. So anyway, a cool trick that I learned from my grandfather is putting a fender washer on the front of the birdhouse, because the bigger birds can't come by and gnaw away at it and make the hole bigger.
I saw that. That's like a cool little feature on the door.
I don't know if that's a common technique or if that's something, but my grandfather discovered it on his own because he said the birds would eat away at it, and you just put a fender washer on there and it was all good. So thanks, Grandpa, for that tip.
Then only metal birding eat.
Birds will move in.
Yeah. When we made ours, I just like picked a spade bit because mine was more just teaching the kids how to make it, not really because I was expecting anything to move in. I picked a spade bit that like was a reasonable size, excuse me, and made the hole in the front. And then once I put it up, everybody was like, oh, well, that's a bluebird box. I guess the style of box that I made was for bluebirds. But the hole that I made was too small for bluebirds. And so like I'm like, well, whatever, you know, something will move in or it won't. I don't really care. That wasn't the point. And so we hung it up on the gazebo, and out from our kitchen window, you can look out and see where this thing's hung up. And we have tons of birds out there all different times. And we have feeders throughout most of the year. And so we just will watch birds out there. So we're sitting out there at breakfast the other day, and I see a bluebird, which we don't see here very often, with all the birds, flies up to the thing and like is flying, trying to get in the hole and can't, and then flies away. And then another one flies up and tries to get in the hole. And I'm like, dang it, people were right. And so I haven't gone out there to make it larger yet, but a couple of different times, actually, I've seen bluebirds out there trying to get into it. So it must be something about that shape or the overall volume of that house must be interesting to that particular type of bird. It's kind of wild.
But. The washer that I used, I needed to make the hole bigger, and I didn't have a good way of... I didn't have any kind of, like... step drill bit or anything to make that hole bigger. And so I'm like, well, I'll just hold onto it with some vice grips and take the die grinder in there. And I learned quickly that sticking a die grinder in a hole is not a good thing, because if it catches things. Yeah. So there was like, I had that aha moment.
Suddenly you have a bigger hole than you wanted.
I was afraid the die grinder was going to, like, it caught for a second. And I'm like, this is not a good idea, because if this catches again, something bad could happen. So on the spindle sander for like an hour, just spindle sanding the whole size hole that I needed. And it was just, it was not fun. It was dumb. It was dusty. That kept getting hot. So I would dip it in water and then just keep sanding the hole bigger. But, I probably could have waited till the next day and went to the store to buy the right size washer, but I decided to torture myself.
So that was one thing I was thinking about. If I made the hole bigger on mine, you know, there's no center point. There's nothing for the bit to rest in. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't put a lot of thought into it, thinking how I would go about making it bigger. I just figured, well, one of these days I'll take it down and make the hole bigger. Jimmy, curious from you. Yeah. How would you make that hole bigger?
Is it
like by an eighth of an inch, 16th of an inch? This is cedar for me.
I would drill. It's a tip I did in a drill tip a long time ago. You drill a hole with a Forstner bit through a piece of scrap. And if you have the opportunity, clamp that scrap right over the other hole and use it as a guide to drill through the hole you made into the hole you want to make. So
there you go.
You just grab the outside of a Forstner bit as opposed to the pinpoint in the middle. So...
Excellent.
And then for the washer, I would just get a big giant rat file. Like you can get like a big round file, and I've done it quite a bit where the file sometimes will start at like a quarter inch at the tip and goes to like a half inch in the middle, and then just stick it in there and just turn it. If you turn a file in the direction of tightening, it'll tighten just like a screw. But you stick it in and turn it in the reverse direction of loosening it. And each time you do, you're grabbing a little bit more material until all of a sudden you're in the middle of the file, and then you just go zig, 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 just push and pull like a saw blade.
Yeah, I did take a file to it, but all I had was like a little wood file. It's maybe a quarter inch round, and that would work.
I could never find my big file when I need to do that. I have like 10 of them, and they're all like, I'm like, okay, next time I need this, I'm going to put it right here. And then the split second later, I completely forget. So stored around my shop are big half-inch diameter files that are perfectly round. And every time I need one, all I could find is the quarter-inch one. It drives me crazy. It reminds me to go to eBay and buy a few.
I know there's got to be a tool that does this, but I've never seen it. So you probably have in your collecting machines thing that you have. Is there a machine that is like an automatic filer so that, you know, it will move a file and then pull it out of the way? You know what I mean? So it's not just back and forth. Like,
well, there's two machines. There's a die filer, which just goes right up and down. And then you, as the operator, would like alleviate the pressure going back in the opposite direction. You know, so it's just like a jigsaw, but it's slowed down. This old Tony's got a couple of cool videos on die filer. He has a fancy European style die filer made like in the 70s. So it's like really industrial. It's like on the edge of like no longer being super industrial. It's a really nice machine. And I have a die filer I used in my bottle opener video that I made, where I made 10 bottle openers. And it was like the day I got the die filer. I'm like, oh, cool, I could use the die filer today. So I have one, and somebody just recently made one. I can't remember who I saw come across my feed. And then also there is a saw, and I have one. It's called the Foley Saw Sharpener, and I was going to kind of pull it out of storage and try and get it set up in my machine shop. Because the other day I went looking for a handsaw, and I couldn't find a handsaw that was sharp. And I have a machine that files them, and it goes like this. It goes, Z, Z, Z. And I'm doing like a karate chop, a slow. Every time it drags across in the low stroke, it files. And then because it's designed to pick up and then it'll go back down again, you won't have any trolls telling the die filing machine, you know, you shouldn't drag it in the other direction. That's how you lose it. That's how you ruin a file. So at the Foley saw sharpening factory, they could hear the trolls, so they fixed that.
The perfect way to ruin a file is to drag it in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
Because I knew that would come up. But now that you say die filer, I actually do remember seeing Will, who works with Alex Steele, use one of those on one of their many knives or swords or something. I don't remember what it was, but I remember him using that machine for, I'm trying to think that what the situation was that he was using that, because he does a lot of hand filing on their blades.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I do remember that now. Let's see. For me, what have I been doing this week? Still been working on R2-D2. Did I talk about R2-D2 last week? I think I did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, so R2-D2 is right behind me, and the last video we put out on it was in November, I think. And people ask about R2-D2 every single video, and then like through Instagram all the time. When's the next R2 video coming out? And the reason that we haven't done a video since then is because it's an incredibly long, tedious process to do like every little stage of it, and there's so many little stages of it. And so for the past couple weeks, I've been trying to focus on getting all of the panels, these little doors on the fronts and on the dome, like all these little things have to open, and they all have these specialized weird hinges because the body itself is a big can. It's a big curve. And so you can't just hinge on the corner. You have to hinge, the pivot point has to be different so that when it opens, it clears the outside curve that it's whatever. Anyway, so getting all those on the body was difficult because it's a curve. And there's a special hinge. Finally got the special hinges in. Finally figured out where to put them. I had to cut out a bunch of the shape on the inside of the body to put these things on. That was a big pain, but it's done. So then I moved on to the dome where you have the little blue panels pop out vertically. But it's a compound curve. It's a dome. So it's curved in multiple directions, and the hinge, it's hard to even explain. The panels that pop out,
both hinge pins have to be in line. Like the one side and the other side, there has to be an imaginary line that goes directly through the pins.
Yeah,
am I correct?
It's a single hinge, so it's a two-sided hinge, so that solves that thing. But the dome itself is two separate pieces of aluminum. So you have this big aluminum dome, an outer dome and an inner dome, and they're glued together. And the cutouts where these panels go are like not in line. It's just hard to explain. Basically, it's a big pain in the butt. That's why I haven't put a video out yet, because I've been wrestling with just trying to get these little details in place. Because if they're not in place, like if the door's not there, it's not going to look like it's supposed to look, right? So you have to have all the doors, but each one of the doors takes, I don't know how long it takes because I haven't gotten them done yet. And I'm trying to get help and stuff on the forums because everybody has run into the same problem before, but it seems to be affecting me differently. Like, I don't think it's been as much of an issue. So I'm thinking maybe I did something wrong in the previous setup to this point. And so now I'm trying to work backwards to try to figure out if I need to go back to a point, if I'm using the wrong something, or so I'm assuming that I made a mistake that other people didn't make. And so I'm trying to go backwards and figure out what that mistake is. And it's just really tedious, and it doesn't feel productive because nothing is actually, I'm debugging something rather than actually making progress.
I think this has nothing to do with R2-D2, but you said something that I get this feeling all the time of, I am in a situation that is unique to me, and I just can't go to the internet to find out because it is so many like compounded things have happened that I am the only one that this has happened to. Now what do I do? And I just have this like, I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to do, and nobody can help me. Even before I even attempt to search to see if somebody else has had this problem, I don't know. It's just one of those feelings I get all the time, and I have since I was a kid. I was just like, what do I do?
And I mean, the reality is that's probably not the case.
Right.
There's almost always been somebody that has a similar situation, and finding it is really just about asking the right question, is like using the right keywords to be able to find someone else's shared experience. And so a few nights ago, I got on the forum, and the R2-D2 forum, and I started asking questions about these particular hinges, and I've been searching, but I couldn't find what you're talking about. I couldn't find any examples. So I finally posted and said, here's my problem. What am I doing wrong? What mistake did I make? Something. And I've already gotten some really good feedback from people, and so I've been using it to try to get it working, and it's not working. All of their feedback, you know, they're saying, well, this is what I did. This is what I did. And when I try to do those things, I still run into the same problem. And so that's pushing me a little bit further towards I must have screwed something up, you know? And I think what's really weird about it is that this project in particular is that if I was making pretty much anything else that I ever make for videos, I would just change it. Like if it's not working, I would be like, okay, well, instead I'll use this material, or I'll change the shape of it to make it work. And I can't do that with this because it's supposed to be R2-D2, right? So if it doesn't look like it's supposed to look in the end, then I'm not going to be happy with it. So there's a weird constraint that I'm not personally used to working within, which is kind of interesting and kind of cool, you know, to have to take the time to get something right versus good enough, or, you know, changing the way it is just to work around an issue. But it's also really tedious and frustrating to have to just continue to do and undo the same hinge over and over and over in hopes that I just figure it out, that it just happens to work one time, and then I can replicate that on the other ones. Because this is a problem of, on the dome, there's 5 panels that all have to be hinged the same way. And so if I can get one of them working, maybe the other 4 will work the same way. Maybe not. I don't really know. And it's just kind of weird. But so I've ended up putting a lot of time into this little problem solving thing and not solve the problem.
Just thinking about in terms of if you have like a curved surface, and is it a matter of where that pin is in space relative to the surface? Because if it's high away, it'll pull out of the hole at a different angle than if it's close to the surface, it'll pull out more like this. If it's up here, it'll pull out like that. You know what I'm saying? So the idea of how relative the pivot hole is to the surface of the material will determine how, like, those 2 far away corners, I don't know exactly what the shape is. I'm just assuming if it's a square.
I'll show you the shape. Not that anybody.
If it's a square shape on a round hole, round dome, those 2 far away holes could get hung up.
So nobody listening can see this, but
right, it's those top shapes right at the top of the R2-D2.
So it's this, the blue, like, it's, they call them a pie piece. So it's right. the blue pieces. And the blue piece is two pieces of sheet metal, of aluminum, glued together over a compound curve. And so when you try to open it, this bottom front edge is getting caught on the outer skin of the dome.
Oh, so the hinges are so internally. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, the hinges are inside, and the hinges are made, they're kind of an interesting, let me grab one to show you. They're an interesting little design made specifically to go around the shape. So the hinge is...
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and so it's made to turn, and theoretically should be pushing the panel out of the hole before it starts to rotate it.
Before it pivots, yeah.
But there's something, you know, and this is made for this purpose. Like, this piece is specifically produced for this particular instance, and I just can't get it.
It looks to me like you might be able to bevel back. If you're looking directly at it, you can't see the back side of the thickness of the material. Bevel back the material, but not obviously don't bring the bevel up to the front edge because then it'll be apparent. But if you bevel back both pieces, they might be able to clear each other and then leave like a
That's what some people
a hairline.
Some people have done on the bottom of this this pie panel. They bevel this bottom edge so that it will clear that. And my hesitation in doing that is that once that's done, I can't undo it. This is a laser cut, you know, or water jet cut. Bent aluminum panel that like
3D print one and see if you can mimic what's supposed to happen and then do it to the aluminum.
I'm looking at I'm so confused. I'm sure that people who cannot see this are just mind blown right now.
Yeah, it's hard to describe, and it's going to be hard to describe in the video even when I can because it's like even somebody who's here, I can point to the problem and say like, look, I'm moving this thing and this is why it doesn't work. But you have to be able to show the inside and the outside as to what's happening. And so I guess one of the frustrations about this whole thing is that I want to be able to figure it out and explain it, because obviously this is a pain point for me. It's a thing that has been...
Draw a cross-section.
It's been halting this whole thing.
Draw a cross-section in Illustrator or something, or Fusion, and see if you could mimic the pivot points about what's happening. And then this way you could see what's happening as it does what it's supposed to.
Yeah, I could, but the disconnect between the actual and the, you know, making a rendering of it or whatever, it would have to be so precise to be able to, you'd have to be able to make that model or that drawing super precisely, figure it out, and then precisely, you know, translate that back to the real world as to where to put the hinge, or maybe there's a spacer that goes in between the hinge and the panel or something like that. But anyway, I've spent a whole lot of time just trying to figure out that little problem, and it's halting the whole video. And so when people ask why R2-D2 has not come out, it's because like I had trouble with that, and so I put it on the shelf for a while and did a bunch of other stuff. Now I've come back to it, and I still have trouble with it, so I'm just trying to solve those same things. And this is, the hinges are like one little piece. This is like a minute of video. You know, it's not like the video.
Right.
It's like a little tiny sequence within this bigger section of a bigger project. So even once I figure this out, it's not like I can spend a 5-minute section talking about the hinges and how they worked and whatever. It's just a little blip in that this is a thing you have to do. And then I got to move on to motors and building feet for it. And I still have a huge amount of work to do. But so that's kind of where a lot of my time has been this past week, is just hot glue and problem solving and trying to figure out the geometry that, you know, if I'm missing something or something. And I don't know. Still not there yet. And I know there's a few people listening who are R2 builders and are probably going, yeah, just check out my build log on the website. I've seen your build log. Everybody over there, super helpful, super awesome. And I have been through a lot of people's website posts about their hinges, and it's weird. I my only conclusion is that I screwed something up somewhere, because nobody else ever, it seems to work fine for everybody else, which means they probably did the right thing and I've done something wrong. I just don't know where that step is.
Have you turned the hinges completely around 180 and attached one side to the other and the other to the other?
That doesn't work at all. Yeah,
well, how can you be so sure?
Doesn't work. I'm absolutely sure.
Okay, I'll do what my mother does. Where? Okay, Mom, I lost my keys. Okay, where is the last place you saw them? My mother always does.
Yeah.
How can you be so sure?
That's what I've been doing.
Hmm. You know, if I had that problem, the first person I would ask is you, Bob. I'm like, Bob would know how to do this. He would just know. Huh. He would look at it and he would know.
Sorry to disappoint. I will know at some point, but not yet. I'm not there yet. So, summer projects.
Yeah.
What you got coming up this summer? David, do you do summer projects? Do you do seasonal?
Not so much. I mean, sometimes because the weather's so crappy in the winter that I won't go get sheets of plywood or whatever. I'm like, I'll wait until the weather's nicer. I have not done too many outdoor projects in the past, although this year I kind of thinking about doing a raised garden bed in the back, but kind of thinking about not doing a video on it because I just want to follow somebody else's recommendations. I don't know. And it's one of those things like, this is going to be unique to me. Do I want to add the complexity of shooting the video? But so I don't know. So I'll probably make a video on the raised garden bed if we do it. But I definitely, we have spots in our couple of our garden areas, our landscaping areas, where the previous owners looks like they had some sort of sculpture. And I want to make a sculpture to do that. But I've been wanting to do that for 3 years. Maybe this year is the year that I do that. And since it's made to live outside, maybe we shoot the whole thing outside and enjoy the weather and do something like that. So, yeah, I'm not very seasonal when it comes to the videos, but maybe, just maybe. And one of the, I don't want to give this idea away because I don't want anybody to do this before me, but one of the ideas that we had is Dan and I, we go to Harbor Freight. We buy nothing but Harbor Freight tools. We come back. We build a project in the driveway or in a parking lot, maybe Harbor Freight parking lot. And then we give away all the tools that we just had. And, you know, the gimmick of the video is, you know, we spent $500 at Harbor Freight and we were able to make this thing. You can do the same. So that's a possibility this summer.
Hmm. That could be cool.
Yeah.
What do you think that thing would be? Like, do you have an idea for what scale that would...
I don't know. Maybe an outdoor bench or something. Or maybe it should be a fine woodworking piece. I don't know. Like you can do fine woodworking with cheaper tools or inexpensive tools. I don't know. Mm. I don't know.
Mm. Semi-fine woodworking.
Semi-fine woodworking.
Pretty all right woodworking.
Pretty all right woodworking.
That's how I describe my woodworking ability.
And this is something I've noticed at Harbor Freight. Like their drill section and their impact drivers, I don't know if it's always been this way, but they have the lower quality and a higher quality now. I forget. Like there's like the Hercules and then the Bauer or something. I don't know. But has that always been like that? Are there two grades of power tools there? And then the wrenches and stuff, there's the higher end, like I think they're called Icon, and then the lower end, the Pittsburgh. Like, so even Harbor Freight now has varying quality, build qualities of their tools.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like a super common marketing scheme. If you give someone more than one option, then, you know, you can drive people to pay more money just by there being two options that are exactly the same, but cost different. Mm. And I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that's what they're doing. I just mean that is definitely a common thing.
Yeah.
It never makes sense to have one offering in a market if you can have two.
So. Mm. I
noticed the Icon line is a newer thing that I noticed for them.
Yeah. Bob, you got you've got years worth of outdoor projects with the barn and the new property.
Yeah, I hope we can actually get to any of them this year. We have some stuff here at the house that I'm wanting to do. There's like a little worn path up in our backyard, so our driveway kind of goes around the back of the house and goes up a hill. And people always walk up the grass, And so there's a little worn path, and I've always wanted to put some stone stairs in there, just like steps, nothing big and elaborate, just some steps in. And so that's definitely something that'll happen this summer. And then we did the gardens. There'll probably be some other beekeeping project. I don't know if I can make videos about that stuff because it's not, I don't know, but there's probably more bee stuff. And then out at the farm, there's like tons of potential projects. I just don't know that we can, like, what we're actually going to be able to get to this season. Because, you know, I've talked about the doing the A-frame cabin, which was really cool. After mentioning that last time, I got an email. I got a couple of emails, but one from an architect who was willing to help me with the architectural side of getting it, like, done, which is super cool. So, but we want to do that. But then that's like a whole, you know, there's a huge amount of design and preparation that goes into the construction of that and the planning of that and the permitting of that and the funding of that, you know, so I don't know when that'll actually happen. It's just something that I want to do one of these days. I want to make a bridge out there. There's a place that doesn't really need a bridge. There's a little creek kind of thing at the bottom of these two hills kind of go down. So it's mostly like a drainage type creek. And right now there's a little wooden, couple pieces of pressure treated wood that somebody put across, and they're nice and sturdy and everything, but, and you can walk across them just fine. But I think it would be a cool place to just build an, like, overly nice, kind of unnecessary bridge. I think it'd just be kind of cool, you know? And so that's probably one of the more short-term things that we'll do. And I've never built a bridge, so I have to do a lot of research to do there on, I know there's a bunch of different ways to build bridges and different types and stuff.
One way is just so to put pressure-treated wood across there. Just
that's true. And we have proof that that works just fine. Yeah. So, yeah. So we'll probably do a bridge out there in the short term. I want to do some, I don't know how to make a video about this. This might be an interesting brainstorm thing. So I want to, I've been cutting trails out there. So I'm making a big loop that runs around the property. And there's, I found two spots that are good kind of primitive campsite spots. One of them, I think I'll probably end up building a little deck because it's kind of on a slope and it would just be a lot easier to camp if you had a flat surface. So I'll either grade that out or build a little platform to sleep on. But I want to make some like trail markers or some sort of a, you know, like a little post that goes in along the trail that has some sort of either distance on it or like a little names or something. Oh, yeah. But I don't know how to make that into an interesting video.
It's a couple funny ideas on that? Because a couple years ago when we used to have a beaver pond in the back and the beavers have moved on and the dam has collapsed and now it's just a big marshy area. We were renting the house to Airbnb tenants for a while there for a couple of years before we lived up here. And so we would all tell them to follow the path to the beaver pond because it is, it's a bit of a hike. It's like about 3/4 of a mile or half a mile through the woods. And we set up these little markers designed like in the 1940s style, like national park. And so I CNC'd all these things that said this path to the beaver pond, you know, another 100 yards or 200 yards through the woods because you couldn't see it. It was all zigzaggy through the woods. And the beaver pond went away and each one of those signs kind of slowly deteriorated. So now when we'd walk the path, we find them like half broken and rotten on the ground. Yeah. And I found half of one recently. It's like, oh, wow. It's like finding something from the 1940s, but it's from 5 years ago.
I have an idea how you could turn that into a video. If the, think of it as like a, you know, your state park mile marker. And if there is a, let's say the trail is a big loop, like at the beginning of the video, you show you taking your drone up there and taking a snapshot of that, of what the shape of that loop. And then you take that back. And instead of like CNCing that into the sign, you could jigsaw or bandsaw that shape, use that as a template, and then take a router and then route that loop into the sign. And, you know, and then cover that with like maybe a sheet of plastic or whatever. Like you could, I think there's a whole cool video right there.
Yeah, I just kind of assumed that I don't have the router skills to be able to like write text with a router. I know that's how a lot of signs have been done, especially that type of wooden sign. put a VBit on there and just like write. I can't do that. So I assumed that
you're not allowed to do that, CNC by the way. Would... That's against the law.
Okay. You look so serious.
He really does.
No, I'm just saying, in the day and age of CNC, you're not allowed, no one's allowed to freestyle hand letters anymore. It's not allowed.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not that I'm not allowed, except that Jimmy's like the sign guy and may come after me for
nobody in this world is allowed to make up typeface unless you're a typeface designer. That's right.
No, it's not that. It's that I'm bad at managing a router, and so I don't think I could actually use it to get text in. So I would assume that it would be a CNC, you know, to get the job to get the text on things like that. And then I just couldn't figure out past that. How do you make that into an interesting video for somebody that doesn't have a CNC or just isn't interested in making really simple signs? Because a lot of times, you know, like your sign videos are interesting because they're always tied to another process, right? They're like some crazy acrylic thing with lights in it, or they're a CNC section, but then the thing that's holding the sign is interesting, or it's got an inlay of this, or it's got a whatever. And so I just couldn't come up with
you could make stone mile markers, you know, like in my town is so old, so like every mile there's this little tombstone on the side of the road that has a shed built over it because people are trying to preserve the ancient history of the area, and those are mile markers from like the 1700s and the 1800s. You could make mile markers cast out of concrete that have typeface in them, you know. You could make like a foam mold that you pour stone into, and you could cast resin, you could sandblast stones, get a stone and sandblast mile marker stuff in there. That's actually really easy. People don't realize that you can get iron oxide and sandblast away a real natural stone, and you could put, you know, a phrase in there. You could laser cut a mask and then masking frisket. It's like a rubberized frisket. I'm sure you could laser. That's how they make tombstones. It seems complicated, but it's actually quite easy. So,
interesting.
What else?
Yeah, that's one of the outdoor projects that I've been wanting to do this summer, just because I think we're going to spend a lot more time out there. And it's not a big enough property that like we need signs. You know, it's not that we don't know how to get around or anything like that. I just think it would be kind of cool to have our own little trail system with our own little signs, because I want the kids to name the different areas. Like there's one place where you go up the trail and there's this tree that fell over, and it's a big tree, but it's still sitting on the stump, right? So it just looks like somebody just folded the tree over, and there's part of it that sticks off the end of that, and you have to walk under it. So it's just like a visual marker that everybody recognizes. Oh yeah, the fallen tree up at the top of the hill.
Fallen tree point.
I want the kids to name points like that and just put little signs there.
In 100 years from now, there'll be a Walmart at Falling Tree.
That's what we're going for.
Bob Claggett. 2025. Walking on my property, it's the same thing. It's like the tree, the tree with the seat, you know, seat tree. There's a tree that grows up and it got diseased and it literally just started going sideways and then it started growing up again. So we call it the tree seat. You know where the tree seat is, right? Yeah, like over there, there's some branches we could use. Or we call this one spot called the Witch's Coven. It's a group of pines that make a perfect oval shape. And it looks like they were specifically planted for some ritual right in the middle of the cloister. So we call that the Witch's Coven. So me and Taylor have all these names, you know, the Y trail, where one Y goes this way and the trail goes that way. The teepee poles, because we got all the teepee poles from this one section. So we say, you know, the spot where we prep the teepee poles, which is kind of a hike away from the house. And then the bridge, I built that bridge a few years ago with Willie. And the other day I was driving around looking for the turkey. So the ravine cuts my property in half, and I usually never go to the back half of the property because there's not too many pet trails on it. But I wanted to go and see if the turkey was in this one spot. And as I got to the bridge, I realized it's been undermined. It's one whole side is sunken considerably down. And I was like, well, it's not that far to the riverbed. It's only like maybe 20 inches. I was like, I'm on a four-wheeler. I could make it. So I hit the gas really hard, and I jumped over the ramp, landed on the bridge, and then got to the other side. And I look back, and now the bridge has collapsed down like another 10 inches. I was like, oh boy. And so I went around, I did my thing. I couldn't find the turkey, and I came back to the bridge, and I got rid of the ramp because I walked across it and got rid of the ramp on the other side, which was just placed on the ground. And then I got back in the quad and I hit the gas and I hit the bank and jumped over it. But I do have to get out there now. So that's one of my summer projects, is to get back out there with a truckload of rocks, jack the bridge up with a Farmer Jack, you know, the ones that you usually see on the front of a four-wheel Jeep. Jack the bridge up with that and pile a bunch of stones under it. Because now where there used to be earth is not there anymore, because the snow, the water from the mountains is what makes all the ravines around here go crazy. Especially, there's been a lot of rain. So I never expected that area to be undermined the way it was. So that's a project. It's not really for video, but I do have to get out there and shore up the bridge again. And I'm going to make this bench. Actually, I'm going to start working on it this week. I talked about it in the beginning, is this bench for Lincoln. A Lincoln Electric video where the bench converts into a table. It's not my invention, but it's something I want to do. And I've been wanting to make this garden hose reel. I have this concept. It's been the one pain in the butt here, is we have 50-foot garden hoses to go to the chicken coop, to go here, to go there, and the hoses just lay in the grass and just make like these dead snake lines in the grass. Because, you know, if it takes 2 days to get a, you know, for the grass, anytime you put the grass down, anytime you put anything on the grass, it creates a dead spot. It takes like 1 day, and then all of a sudden you have a yellow stain that takes the whole summer to go away. And so I'm sick of piling the garden hose just like randomly in the yard. So I want to try and make a big reel and have all these connections. I bought all this stuff last summer. I just never got to doing it. So you have this concept where it's all plasma cut steel. It's going to be I could put like 100 feet of hose on it. I want to try and figure out how to make something that's super, super, super overbuilt. Because no matter which ones you buy, these garden hose things, they all like one winter and they just look like something you picked out of the garbage pile. Like this, the winter and the weather destroys everything except for stones and in many cases, steel. I mean, it will make it rusty, but it won't make it go away. You know, all these, like you'll buy like a $200 garden hose reel thing and it starts looking like a dilapidated house in one season.
Yeah. Yeah. The plastic doesn't seem to last.
No.
I'm not sure why that is. It seems like they would be making that specifically for being outside and lasting through weather, but I'm with you. Well, what else? Any other?
Well, it's funny. Speaking of seasonal stuff, I know the guys on Wood Talk talked about it a few times. Recently, I had a couple of conversations with people. They're like, what can I do to wood? And I'm just saying this out just as a matter of my personal experience. And everybody always asks, what can I do to wood to keep it from getting weathered? And the answer is nothing. There's nothing you can do to wood to keep the elements from overtaking it in time. And I built that big table for my friends down in the Bahamas. I built that big table a couple summers ago. And I said to them, they go, well, it's going to be outside most of the time. I was like, no matter what I do to this table, it's going to get deteriorated by the weather, especially if it's going to be in the sun. The sun destroys everything. And of course, wind and rain. And I spoke to them recently. They're like, yeah, we're going to have to fly you down here just to refinish this table. It's like completely destroyed. And I said, the only way you're going to maintain anything that's going to be outside on an ongoing basis is to maintain it like once a week. You got to get out there like once a week, once every 2 weeks, give it a light sanding, give it another new coat of paint. That's why boats, it's a big problem with wooden boats, is they always have to be redone. There's nothing you can do to prevent the elements from overtaking wood. And metal will last longer than wood, especially cast iron, obviously, and you know, a thicker steel. But in time, everything's going to become weathered. So that's just a little springtime advice for anybody that's going to build a picnic table and give it a coat of, you know, deck finish or whatever. That will last, you know, probably a season, but it's going to go gray no matter what. There's nothing's going to preserve that beautiful new look. Nothing.
I mean, you could theoretically seal something in like an epoxy, some sort of crazy coat, but it's not realistic to do that.
It'll peel off. It will. Yeah. it'll start to. I did a project once with where there was an epoxy on top, and then the epoxy will begin to separate. Because what happens is, and I would love to see long term reviews of these river tables. I don't understand how some of these river tables are going to really work, because the wood has a different expansion and contraction rate than the plastic. And in 10 years from now, you're going to have big white separation lines between, especially the ones where like the river is in the middle and you really have the beautiful wood right next to it, as opposed to the ones that are completely immersed in a big, beautiful, sexy cube of resin. That's a different story because it doesn't seem like oxygen can get at the wood. But the ones where you have like the wood, the river, and then the wood again, that I can only imagine they're going to start to separate. And I'd be curious if anybody has any pictures of that happening. I'd be curious to see. It just, in my gut instinct, wood will always expand and contract different than any of the material next to it. And
now, I mean,
will cause a separation, even if it's just a thin surface of finish.
One consideration there, though, is like how much of a change. Obviously, wood's going to change regardless of where it is, regardless of the situation, the environment. But if it's in the same interior space, it has less of a chance of that happening. You just have the humidity swing of the seasons, but it's still in a heated and cooled environment. So it's,
I don't think
it's not like it's, outside. That
it's
would
not so much
really
heat. It's humidity. It's pure humidity. Right. So, mm-hmm. I mean, even if it's 70 degrees all year round, that humidity is going to cause that wood to move and break apart and fail.
Well, my point is like in our house, we have a dehumidifier. Well, you have a humidifier. And so in the winter, furnace, you know, is taking moisture out of the air as it's heating it and stuff. But then in the summer, backwards. So in the winter, we have to humidify the air so that everything's not all staticky and our noses don't dry out and all that type of stuff. And then in the summer, we turn that off because there's enough humidity in the air already. But there's still a fluctuation, even if the temperature within the house stays the same. That was my point, is that even between the seasons, if the temperature stays the same, the humidity is still, there is a change, whether it's drastic or not. And I wonder how that affects, you know, furniture that's made to be inside differently than stuff that's made to be outside, which is obviously going to have a much broader swing with temperature and humidity and stuff.
Sorry to jump on you there.
But
Yeah, I mean, you definitely have to, when you make furniture outside, you have to, I don't think you're relying on glue joints necessarily. You have more mechanical joints, and everything can expand and contract a lot more because not only is it getting the humidity changing, but you're actually getting moisture on there that's going to sit and soak in and cause it to expand and contract even more. Not even seasonally, just from day to day. So,
right. So, well, okay, let's take a river table that's in a relatively controlled environment. Is the type that you're talking about where you have like wood, resin, wood. So you have on both of those pieces of wood, probably three sides of that are exposed and are drawing in moisture. Well, I guess the top and the bottom as well, but we're just thinking about the outside edges. Those are going to draw it in. And that's going to be the easiest place. Those three sides are going to be the easiest places for it to and contract. Is it always going to try to pull itself away from the resin if it can move on those other three sides? Or do you think it would stay intact, like almost glued to the resin?
Potentially, yeah. I think that's why I think it's going to take a really long time for these separations to happen. But any little movement, even if it's somewhat microscopic, will start to deteriorate that bond between those two different materials. One is going to expand and contract at a different rate than the other because it's not the same material. It's just like when I worked in a sign shop, you see those plastic signs inside of a metal frame box, and it has like a big lip around the edge. That lip hides in some cases up to a half inch of expansion because that plastic on a sunny day will expand at least a half inch and if you sometimes you see signs that don't allow for that expansion, and you notice the sign is either puckered in or puckered out, and that's because it's trying to expand. It's got nowhere to go, so it puckers in. You'll see like a cheap metal box sign, and so those over time, and then you see the letters might fall off because the glue is expanding and contracting. So that's just like a visible thing as an example. But I do honestly believe in my experience that any two dissimilar materials that are glued together, especially if they're large and they have a, you know, 1% expansion rate on something that's, you know, an inch is almost imperceptible. But a 1% expansion rate on something that's 10 feet long is, you know, a perceptible movement. And if you have two different materials, it's something that's going to start to move. So that's just my, it's just my gut instinct. It's not preventing, like I made one of those tables and I think that what I discussed is going to happen. I made the little, I call it a pond table where the resin is trapped by the rotted circumference of wood. And especially in my circumstance where it goes, you know, it's below zero and then goes up to 90 degrees. And it's, you know, that table's in my warehouse. It's not in the house. So I'm curious to see what happens there. Just my gut instinct. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I guess just as you're doing seasonal projects, just take into consideration where they're going to be and you know, what kind of swings they're going to have.
Yeah.
I know that I've thought about making kind of an outdoor dining table for our back porch a few times, and I probably will one of these days. But one of the hesitations has always been that I've never made a dining table that took into consideration the expansion. Well, you know what I mean? Like a lot of times people will make tables and they don't think in about that and they just deal with it. I've seen people do like breadboard ends to be able to give it the space to do that.
Yeah.
I kind of know, I've seen people do it enough, but I've never taken that on because that is always a thing I'm kind of worried about. Like
I'll give you a lot of work
material in and then it just blow itself apart.
A tip that I learned, you know, you learn by doing. I made a table for somebody years ago with breadboard ends, and I didn't understand conspanding and contraction. And they called me, they're like, yeah, the end is like becoming unglued. And I went and looked, and now the breadboard end is sticking out of both sides a quarter inch because the table contracted. Then I realized what was going on. I didn't account for expansion and contraction. Then I made tables for a restaurant, and they wanted breadboard ends because they didn't want like the open end grain to be against the person at either end of the long table. So I said, the only way I'm going to do this, and they agreed, is I said, I'm going to use, let's say if it was, you know, four boards of 5 inches across, so it's about 24-inch table, 24-inch table. I attached each board to the frame on its own, and then the breadboard end goes on the end of all those boards. I didn't glue them together. So each board will expand and contract in its own space. And they were okay with, it was a very rustic spot. So it was they were okay with nail holes showing at the top, which I kind of accentuated to look a little sexy and antique-y. So each board flexed and contracted in its own space. It wasn't a collection of all those boards contracting one way and then back again. And that table looked great. I would always, every kind, I was near that at restaurant, I'd go in and just take a look at the tables, and it was fine. The breadboard ends would be a little proud, but like a couple of millimeters. They weren't proud by like a quarter inch. And so the table that I made in my backyard with 2x10 planks, it has 3 2x10s. Each plank is attached to a frame on its own. You'll get like a picnic table gap between them, but that's the consequence of having a table. So each board will expand and contract in its current space, not pull all the way together or expand all the way apart as a group. So I found that's the best way to do a table that will expand and contract, is to have individual boards. And actually, the table that I did for the restaurant, I left a part out, is I tongue and grooved them, but I didn't glue them together. So the tongue and grooves move on each other, and you will get a little crumb table, you know, you get a little crumb trap in the table. I told them that, and they said you just have to keep sweeping out the crumb trap if the table gets, you know, corroded with stuff. So anyway, so that was my solve. And now if I'm going to make a table that is expected to be outside, I wouldn't do it any other way. Keep the boards individual. So
cool,
that's my two cents. Tip.
Well, unless you guys got anything else, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, everybody that helps us out over at patreon.com/makingit. We're really grateful for the support. We turned down some sponsors on occasion and some other things just because we don't need them because of the people at Patreon that help us out. So big thanks to everybody over there, especially our top supporters, Corey Ward, Works by Solo, Chad from Mancrafting, Maker in Training, Funkiss Artistic Creations, Blondie Hacks, You Can Make This Too, Odin Leather Goods, Jenny and Davis, and Albers Woodworks. A lot of times people ask why we don't have a larger pool of people at that top level, and it's because I have to read their names every
week, so. That's a good reason.
And that list would get really, really long, I think, if we allowed it to, which is kind of amazing, but, you know, it's a lot of names to read. So, anyway, big thanks to them and everybody else that helps us out over there. Everybody gets the after show. Everybody at any level on Patreon gets more of us talking. So if that sounds interesting to you, I don't know why, but if it does, you go to patreon.com/makingit. Another thing, you always hear people on podcasts. I hear people on podcasts talk about leaving reviews on iTunes and on whatever thing, you know, you listen to the show on, and how that lets other people, it gets the show in front of other people.
More
now,
aggression.
I don't actually understand if that's true or how that would work. I don't know how a review, I guess it maybe just puts it, there's some suggestion engine that it like puts it in front of people if it has good reviews. If that's something that you're interested in helping us with, getting other people to listen to the show, then go leave us a review. I'm not going to read them because I've read them in the past, and the nice ones are really nice and the mean ones are really mean.
Everybody hates me because I'm a snarky.
So I'm not going to go read those, but I would appreciate it if you would leave us a review.
Don't say mean things about me. Helps. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to talk over Bob.
Anyway, that's it. That's my thing. What have you guys been watching? You got anything new? Anything cool?
Dave, you go.
I'm going to go with Andrew Klein. I probably have picked Andrew Klein before, but...
Yeah. a few times.
Yeah, and that's okay. And I'm going to pick Andrew Klein again in the future. That is because he is a really smart dude. He's a really good dude, and he makes really good videos. And if you want to learn stuff, you should watch him. He is working with a company called MagSwitch, and I have a couple of their jigs, and they have magnets that turn off and on. And we were talking about stuff via email, and I said, I want a different overhead dust collection for my table saw. Right now I have the big saw stop one, and it's always in the way. It's really big. When it swings out, it hangs out beyond the table saw, and it's in the way. And then when it's over the table saw, it's in the way, and... Here's a fun little secret. Sometimes when I'm at my bench and I have a movie on the TV screen, the stupid overarm dust collection is in the way, and I have to work around to see the TV screen. So I'm like, and I think it takes away some of the dust collection from the under the table saw because I don't have anything super powerful. And so I'm like, what if I don't need dust collection? I just need something to contain the dust there, just so the under the table saw dust collection can pull it underneath the table saw. And he just whips something up like within a couple of hours, and it uses the Meg switch, and it's this thing that just connects to the cast iron top. And and obviously this doesn't work with big sheet goods or whatever, but he's like, here, try this. Would this work? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. And then he just made one and sent it to me, and I haven't had a chance to use it yet.
Wow.
And he made a little video on it, and I discussed it in my recent video about cleaning up the shop. So I haven't even tested it out yet. But anyway, he is really good at taking ideas and then... he's good at ideas. I'll just state he's really good with coming up with new inventive ideas. Just Andrew Klein, go check him out. Smart dude.
And the mag switches are super cool. We're using them too.
Yeah.
He gave us some at WorkbenchCon, and they're pretty awesome.
Yeah. So Andrew Klein.
Cool.
I'm going to shout out to Jason at Fireball Tools. He's just restored this old bandsaw, and he's building all the guards and cages for it. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see that yet, but Jason's is, talk about, people complain about me having fancy tools. Jason's got like a 15 by 8 foot water jet that cuts like 1 or 2 inch thick steel, and everything he makes is made on that water jet. It's incredible. He water jets wood and plastic and steel. Mm. And Jason owns a company called Fireball Tools, which makes the welding squares. The fixture squares, which are amazing. And he's just a big kid in a really cool shop. So check out Jason at Fireball Tools. He recently, when we were down in Texas, we were all hanging out together at Andrew's shop, Andrew Blacksmith Tools. and Jason picked out a couple of tools from Andrew. Jason picked out tools from Andrew's junkyard, and he was restoring this bandsaw. Was one of those tools he picked out while we were hanging out. So it was nice to see where we like picked it up with a crane and pulled it out to like kind of dust it off, and now he's getting it back in working order. So it's a beautiful machine, and he's really zhuzhing it up. And he does a real interesting thing with hinges, similar to what we were talking about, not the same application, but he makes this giant door that swings away from the front of the bandsaw. And the hinges are, it's a way to take an awkward shape and make it pivot in space. So check out that video. Two parts. This is part two, just came out last night, yesterday.
Is that, is this his company, Fireball Tool?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's some awesome squares and jigs and vices and stuff on here. This is really cool.
Yeah, they make really nice stuff.
Yeah.
So mine is not related to any of the stuff that we do, but, and a lot of people don't like them, but Radiohead has always been one of my favorite bands. I don't, and they recently started releasing, because of everybody stuck at home, they started releasing their old concerts. Like I think once every week, someday they release a new concert, and they're like 2.5 hour, super well produced, you know. And they're not just recent. There's some from, I saw one from 2009 and I don't know, older years, and some of them are from a year ago. But it's just cool to see a show by some, like, I really respect them. They're super creative in my mind, and they have affected me musically a whole lot. So to be able to see them play in a bunch of different places, like different eras of their life, of their band life, and in different physical places, it's just really cool to see. And so them adding concerts to this big open thing that you can just go through and watch, I think it's a lot of fun. I've been kind of putting it on in the background and enjoying them. So if anybody's into Radiohead, that's there. I know they are not a lot of people's taste. That's understandable.
The great thing about Radiohead is what have they been around since like 92 or something like that? And maybe even longer. The progression and the style changes. Like the first record, it sounds so 90s. Like it sounds exactly like the 90s. And then they just slowly progressed. And once they kind of like, for me, like the bends was like the, like, oh, the Radiohead has found their voice. And then like 5 years later, they completely changed their sound and they went into something else. So it's really, really great progression. And they're still a band, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's a progression. We could talk about music forever. We should do a music podcast. There's a progression, but then there's also this like, oh, let's take a really hard left turn.
Right.
Everybody's expecting us to progress in this direction. Like, oh, let's go way over there now. And then let's go way over there now. I think it's really cool. Even if not everything they do is interesting to me, I still respect the fact that they do it, you know.
I'm going to ask, you don't have to put this in the show notes, but one, speaking of music, this is another pick, is the Beastie Boys movie. Oh my gosh, it's so good.
Oh yeah.
It is so,
I haven't seen it yet.
So the Beastie Boys is one of my favorite all-time bands, and they're a band, like, with every single record, completely changed their sound, completely changed what they were about, and progressed as people, and as a band. And the movie is so good. It has all the feels. It's going to, my friend Brian, I was talking to him about, like, oh, it's just a roller coaster, and he's like, yeah, it was a casserole of emotions. Like, that's such a beautiful way of saying something. But yeah, the Beastie Boys movie is my pick. Emotions.
Nice. Okay, I'll put that in here. And that's only available on
Apple TV, but there's a free trial.
Oh, okay.
So you can watch it. And it's a documentary, but they do it live on stage. So Spike Jonze, the great video director, directs it. Spike Jonze, the music video director, and they're taking excerpts from the book and they're doing it live on stage in front of an audience with video clips. And it's just really well done. It's a different type of documentary.
Cool. Right on. All right. Well, I guess that's it, unless you guys got anything else.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. Cool. Well, thanks for hanging out with us, everybody, this week. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time.
Love you.
Bye-bye. Love you. Bye-bye.